Welcome to The How of Business with your host, Henry Lopez, the podcast that helps you start, run, and grow your small business. And now, here is your host.
Welcome to this episode of The How of Business. This is Henry Lopez, and my co-host is David Begin. David, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me, Henry. It's always a pleasure.
Absolutely. So on this episode, David and I are going to explore the topic of objection handling. Objection handling, typically as it faces us in the sales process and selling our product or service. But I tell you, these tips can apply to any situation where you're handling or responding to an objection. It could be internal, but mostly this is something that we try to get better and better at and be prepared for as it relates to our sales process. For the show notes page for this episode and all of my other business resources and to learn about my one-on-one and group coaching programs, just visit thehowofbusiness.com. And also, I encourage you to please subscribe wherever you're listening to the episode so that you don't miss any future episodes. All right, David, let's get into it. Objection handling, what the heck is it? So yes. The definition I have, I'm sorry to jump in there. The definition I have is how you, the seller, responds to a prospect's concerns about purchasing your product or service, typically during a sales process. What were you going to say?
Yeah, no, I agree with that. And one thing, as I was reading the notes, it's interesting that we sometimes think of, we think sales is just talking about our product, and then we get to objection handling. I guess, oh my goodness, they've got objections. But, you know, as I was thinking about this, really objections is the second half of the sales process.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to be as prepared in the second half of the sales process as you are talking about your product.
Absolutely. Absolutely. In fact, I had a quote here. I don't know if I added it in here, but yeah, exactly. If you don't have objections, you really don't have somebody who's interested, right? This is a normal process. But I think to your point, we often are so focused, if we don't have experience with sales or we don't have any training or we haven't developed it as a skill, we assume that the goal is to throw out as much information as possible, and then hopefully they'll be overwhelmed and overjoyed and just sign and buy right away.
Yeah. Yeah. And that rarely, if ever, happens. And so we have to be prepared for objections. And it's interesting, as I think about my sales career, I always was afraid of objections because I never really prepped for them. But now in reading these notes, I think about, you have to, you know, I mean, objections are good. You have to think of objections as good because it moves the sales process further down the line.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm sure I never loved objections, but one of the things I always figured out, or I figured out early, I should say, about objections in that term, is I figured out early in life, especially when we were presenting something or demonstrating a solution, is that I always felt that the audience, especially those key people in the audience, need to hear you say no sometimes before they believe your yeses. And I know this is a little bit off on a tangent, but I think it's related. In other words, if we don't handle their objections, if we don't let them bring up issues, and if sometimes we don't say, you know, you're right, David, we don't do that, but we do this other thing. You know, if we don't say no sometimes, then people, I don't think, believe us. Because right. If everything out of our mind, if out of our mouth is, oh, yes, we do that. Oh, yes, we do that. I don't think our trust builds as effectively.
Yeah, I agree. And the worst thing is a customer that has no objections, because they're not going to buy from you. There's no way they're going to buy from you.
Yeah, it's rare, I think, but you're right. That should be a warning sign that something's not right.
Yeah, yeah. And we've learned to try to come up with questions to try to get them to open up. That's one thing that Mike and I are trying to do a better job of is, We need to get their reaction, either good or bad. And it's fine if it's something they just don't want to do, but we've got to get a reaction. If we can't get a reaction, then we know that deal is ultimately lost. So we try to get them to say something about our products and offerings.
Yep, agreed. I have a quote from Zig Ziglar. Zig Ziglar, for those of you who may not know the name, is a famous and celebrated sales trainer and motivational speaker. And he famously said, quote, "Every sale has five basic obstacles: no need, no money, no hurry, no desire, no trust," end quote. And I think that encapsulates it great as a segue here to talking about why do people have objections. But I thought that was a simple but on spot on quote from Zig Ziglar.
No, I agree. I think it's really important. Zig Ziglar was probably the first motivational and sales trainer that existed back. Come on, was it 1950s, 1960s, mm-hmm. or? Yeah, he was. He really helped a lot of people kind of accelerate their sales career. But interesting that some of those obstacles you can't overcome. Like if they don't have a need, that's not anything you can overcome if they truly don't have a need.
Good point. If they truly don't have a need, because we do have, as we know, sometimes latent needs or latent desires that we may uncover, in particular, if it's something we're offering that's new or new in a market or revolutionary. Yeah, I mean, famously, nobody thought they had a need for a smartphone, right?
Right.
But that need got created. But you're right. If there really is no pain and the alternative that's viable is no decision, then you got nothing.
Yeah. And as I look at this, where he talks about no need or no desire, we could desire something, but not need it. I think that's what mm-hmm. you're talking about. Like, mm-hmm. you know, you think about a Lamborghini salesperson. I mean, people don't really need it, but they want one.
Sure. Yeah, that's aspirational. Yeah. But I'm talking to more like, for example, what you're doing now with Car Wash OS, where there could be car wash operators that don't realize that this is something that they're missing. They don't realize the importance of what operational systems will mean to them, what an employee manual will mean, what that initial training will mean to them. They don't know what they don't know, right? Sometimes right. we have to bring them to understand, oh yeah, I'm going to have that pain. Now that's a hard sell, but that's something we have to do sometimes in the sales process.
Right, right, agreed.
So speaking of that, I've boiled it down to top three reasons for objections. Obviously, there's more than this, but I think I can kind of encapsulate most of the ones that we face, especially as small business owners selling our product or service. And so let's talk about that. We'll start with price. So what you might hear there is something along the lines of, we don't have the budget for this, or that's too expensive. But I think price is often the biggest objection we find, if not in every sales cycle almost.
Right, right. I agree. I agree that price becomes up the most important. The thing about budget is an interesting objection, because I find that to be the most easy to overcome if somebody is really interested in your product or service. Mm-hmm. Because people, you know, first of all, budget is a reason, right? People, you always want to try to get to somebody who isn't constrained by budgets, first right. of all. Second of all, if they truly believe in your product or service, they'll find a way to buy it. Mm-hmm. Budgets are, I hate to say excuses, but when people say we don't have the budget for it, unless you're in federal government, people can find money to, you know, they'll move money from one budget to another. Executives, you know, they're real typically not constrained by budgets per se. If they really think something needs to be done, they'll find a way to do it.
Absolutely. No, you're absolutely right. But I love your point about, if that is really what's being put forth as the reason, you may not be talking to the decision maker. That could be part of the problem.
Yeah. Or it's just an excuse. I hate to say that word, but it's typically an excuse that we don't see the value in what you're doing, and we're going to use budget as an excuse because I don't want to tell you I don't like you.
Yeah. And the key word there is value, I think.
Right.
So it's very easy for all of us, including our sales teams, to say, well, our pricing just is out of line. We're charging too much.
Right.
It's easy to say, well, we need to discount. Those things are easy to do. Typically, and in most cases, if we've done our research on our pricing and our pricing is in line with the marketplace, or there's a reason why we're charging a premium, then it's because we have not established enough value in the minds of the prospective customer.
Right, right.
Grant Cardone, I don't know if you've heard of Grant Cardone, you probably have. Yep. He's well known in these circles as well these days. He's wrote a book famously called Sell or Be Sold, How to Get Your Way in Business and in Life. And a quote from that book that I think applies here is, quote, "The price myth is probably the most interesting of all sales myths, because while price is the most common objection, it's rarely the real issue," end quote.
Yes. Yes, I would agree. I would agree. Now, I was thinking about this because I've had to turn down some solutions that I've wanted exclusively on price, mm-hmm. because when I'm trying to measure everything else I'm doing, it's not high on the priority list at this point. Yep. Or we just, you know, we honestly don't have the money for it.
Right. And that may well be the case. And so that's an unqualified opportunity then perhaps that you are chasing in that case, right?
Yeah,
this is important.
Yeah, this is actually people chasing me that I'm telling.
Yeah, yeah, no, I understand. You know, but I'm saying from my perspective, if I was selling you, then you might not be the right fit for me at this point in time as far as a prospective client.
Right.
That pain or that problem that I'm solving is not, there's not enough value there for what I'm asking you to pay.
Or there's too much pain going on and you're having to prioritize which pain you're going to address.
Well said. So the point on pricing is typically what we have to do as salespeople, whether us or our teams or collectively, is to dig deeper, to understand the true needs and concerns of our prospects rather than taking price objections at their face value.
Yeah.
Typically, there's something else going on that you need to uncover or that you failed to align with as far as presenting value.
Yeah. And we've struggled with this in our offerings because we're selling to a individual who's about to embark on something. They don't really have the pain right now. We're trying to communicate to them, if you've solved these issues, it's going to make your life better in the future, which is a tough sell because they don't have the problem right now.
That's
you know, the problem they have is they just spent millions of dollars building this car wash, for example, and we're asking for a small, tiny portion of what they've built to help them operate it effectively. But, you know, they're tired of writing checks and, you know, it's hard for them to, it's not that they can't see the value necessarily. It's just, they don't want to spend the money because they spent all this other money.
Yeah.
They're trying to figure out ways to cut costs.
It's hard for people to spend the money to avoid expenses or to avoid issues that might arise in the future, right? It's like in insurance that we hate paying for, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly right. And somebody had brought up the term, which I use quite a bit, is we are selling vitamins, not painkillers.
Mm, love that.
And it's tough to sell vitamins to people. You almost have to scare them into selling it. If you look at insurance people, you know, they basically talk about all the terrible things that are going to happen if you don't have insurance. Car insurance is one, for example, you have to have. So there's no real choice there that you can do. But, you know, life insurance, other types of insurance platforms, you know, you're buying it in anticipation or solving a problem you might never have. And that's tough.
Agreed. All right. So that's price. The second most common typically is a combination of need or urgency. In other words, something like you might hear, this is not something we really need right now. We already have a solution in place for this, or this isn't a priority right now. So that lack of need or urgency that you touched on earlier is another common objection, right?
Right. And I think in your context discussion with your prospect, you've got to ask them, is there a compelling event that there's something's happened that made you start looking for these offerings? We always ask that question. Sometimes we don't get the answer we're looking for, but we're always looking for, you know, is there something that happened? We had one client that had a bad accident in the car wash, and that was their compelling event to start fixing some of the safety training issues that they needed to address. So that was a great example of a compelling event for them to start taking action. But sometimes, you know, you always have to ask, is there something? Now that doesn't say that you can't sell to them, but it's going to be more difficult and your sales process will probably extend out if there's no reason for them to make a decision.
Yeah. Yeah. And this ties somewhat to that issue we just touched on, that people may not know they have this need, right? It hasn't been addressed before. For example, I'm thinking of my client, Josh, and their business is in the trash compaction. So they will bring out their specialized machine that compacts the trash that's in a dumpster, you know, these portable dumpsters at construction sites, so that they get more capacity out of each of those loads. It's a brilliant idea, but it's not something that people have bought before. They, you know, it's like, I don't know if I need this. I didn't even realize I had a pain there.
Yeah.
So he's got to be very careful in uncovering and getting them to see that they in fact have a need there, that there's an opportunity for expense reduction. And that's, If that isn't established first, then he's going to get the response of, I don't think we need this. This is not something that's important to us right now.
Yeah. Yeah. Those people had a lot of pressing issues.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And getting the trash compacted is not mission critical to them, at least, not relative to everything else they've got going on.
Yeah.
So this is a dumpster at a construction site, right? Think of it that way. Yeah. So that's where it really comes into play.
You just missed my little quippy there. They had pressing issues.
Oh, I did miss that. Wow. That went right over my head.
Completely over your head. But
man,
we'll be here all week.
We'll be here all week. So maybe a different version would be they had a crushing issue.
They had a crushing issue. Right. They had crushing issues.
Oy vey.
No, it's right. Good, but that's a good example of a problem people don't realize they have until. Mm-hmm. But
well, it also speaks to that challenge of when we're selling something, whether it's a latent pain or something that people have never bought before, or they don't know how to buy. Those are harder sales. We have to really do our work of uncovering those pains, asking the right questions up front as part of our sales pitch.
Yeah. Yeah. And identifying, we used to call them sources of urgency. So what are the different sources of urgency? And, you've got to be able to uncover. There could be that if they do have budget money, that budget money is going to run out, right?
Mm-hmm.
It could be executives putting pressure on people to solve these problems. It could be governmental regulations that are about to come into play. There's a lot of different things that are out there that, you got to be able to identify.
Agreed. All right. So we've talked about price. We've talked a bit about need and urgency. And the third biggest, most common objection is just a lack of trust or the issue of trust. Yeah. You might hear things like, I've never heard of your company, which is often the case for us as small business owners, especially as we're getting established and we don't have a brand. Or you might hear another company has a better solution. In other words, they're enamored or have been sold by someone else. So that trust objection occurs typically when there's skepticism about the product's effectiveness or the company's reliability or the credibility of the salesperson. They may not quite trust me. And those are issues that could come up and turn into objections. Yeah.
Right. Right. Agreed. Yeah. And we had this problem when we first started our consulting company. Nobody had heard of us. We didn't have a lot. We didn't have a very robust customer base that we could refer people to. We had a general trust problem when we first started. So that's probably going to happen no matter what.
Yeah. And again, especially for small business owners, when you're first getting started, your brand doesn't have much value, right?
Yeah.
And so it's really you and how you communicate trust. I remember back in our sales training days, we came to learn about this book called The Trust Factor. The Trusted Advisor, rather, is the name of the book. The Trusted Advisor by David Meister and Robert Galford and Charles Green. It's a great book about building trust. And one of the things we used to pull out of that when we were doing sales training, David, was the trust formula.
Yes.
And what I loved about this formula is it really is so simple but effective. What he puts forward in the book is the trust formula. In other words, getting somebody to develop trust in you as the salesperson or the company trying to offer them something. He says the formula is trust equals credibility plus reliability plus intimacy. And here's the key, divided by self-orientation. In other words, that self-orientation, if we will reduce that, if it's less about our company history and about our founder and about our features and more about them and the problems that they have that we can help them resolve, that really switches and turns that trust formula in our favor really in a very short period of time.
Yeah. When we used to teach this, we used to put numbers to this. Mm-hmm. So, I think it was 1 through 5 or 1 through 3, but you could actually come up with a trust score that you could come up with. So if you had to define credibility, what would credibility be?
That you have a reputation. And again, we may or may not have, but certainly that you have customer examples, that you have some level of credibility for having delivered this service or this product.
So you know what you're talking about is mm-hmm. what we used to use.
Yep.
And then reliability is an important one. You do what you say you're going to do.
That's right. You show up when you say it's little things sometimes that add up to reliability, right?
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, I have, and I would say, do you know people in the sales world that's credible, but not reliable?
Exactly. And it could be as simple as, hey, David, I'm going to follow up with that tomorrow. And then it's next week before you hear from me, right?
Yeah. And it's common nowadays. It's more common that people just ghost Absolutely. You know, they wait too long. I mean, customer service, is really taking a hit, I think, in today's world. But and then we reverse it and say, do you know people who are reliable but not credible? And you go back in your head and you think, yeah, I can think of somebody that just didn't know what they were talking about, which is terrible, you know. And then getting to know somebody, right? They want to know you and like you as a person was kind of the intimacy part of it, right? They buy from people they like and people they trust.
They know. But the problem with that, of course, is that that takes time. That takes time.
Yeah. It's not something you can build quite a bit. And then you divide that by self-orientation because if your orientation to your customer, hey, I really want you to buy this because I need this for my quarterly sales goal, self-orientation is pretty low.
Yeah. So. Or we've got a special going on now, or you know, so that's my motivation. Or again, if what is typical, David, is I go right into my feature dump. Here are all of the things my product does.
Yeah. You know, and it was interesting when I started selling the consulting services now. I did that and I knew better, but I did it anyway. And I'm like, I can't believe I did that.
This is Henry Lopez, briefly pausing this episode to invite you to schedule a free coaching consultation with me. I welcome the opportunity to chat with you about your business plans and offer the guidance and accountability that we all need to achieve success. As an experienced small business owner myself, I understand the challenges you're experiencing, and often it's about helping you ask the right questions to help you make progress towards achieving your goals. Whether it's getting started with your first business or growing and maybe exiting your existing small business, I can help you get there. To find out more about my business coaching services and to schedule your free coaching consultation, please visit thehowofbusiness.com. Take that next step today towards finally realizing your business ownership dreams. I look forward to speaking with you soon. Do you think it was in part because you didn't quite know yet who your ideal client was?
Well, I was trying to productize it to the extent this is what we offer. It's one price, take it or leave it.
I see.
And so I think I started with that attitude, and obviously that attitude didn't work well for us. So we changed our product offerings a little bit, but now we've really focused on the context discussion. We'll spend about an hour or so with our client just talking to them. And the difference that has made for us, and I just can't believe how the difference it's made. It's really opened them up. You know, they trust us more. There's a lot of great things when we're asking questions about them and their business and urgency and what happens if you don't solve this problem? What are some of the obstacles? It is amazing the difference. And I knew this, but I didn't do it. And I
it's interesting. It's interesting.
Kicked myself that I didn't do it.
It's interesting how, you know, it hasn't changed. It still goes back to the basics of how this works, right?
Yeah.
All right. So those are some common reasons for objections. Let's go into a formula or a method rather to handle objections. This is what I did. There's various methods out there. You and I used to teach a method. There's a little bit more involved. It really is more appropriate for a more complex sale. But the one that I came upon, and I can't find who it's attributed to originally. So if you're listening and you know, then by all means, share a comment on the show notes page for this episode at thehowofbusiness.com. But it's called the feel, felt, found method. Feel, felt, found. And so I'm going to break those steps up. And as a way to think through and to handle an objection. Now, remember, whenever you're learning a skill like this, and we break it down into its components, it feels heavy. It feels awkward, right? So but that's what we have to do to learn something. And then you get better at it, you try it, you use it, and then it becomes more fluid and it comes in context. So understand that that's always going to be the case when you're developing a new skill, right?
Right.
So feel, what do I mean by feel? Feel has a couple of components to it. And of course, feel, felt, found sounds good, right? All three Fs. But pause and listen actively. This we've been talking about this already, that listening to the customer or the prospective customer rather, and acknowledging this concern here in the context of an objection that's been raised, listen to the objection and start by validating their feelings or their concerns as valid. Don't be dismissive of them. Show that you understand and respect their viewpoint. And I tell you, this step is so critical for building that trust that we just talked about. So a way to typically start it, if you'll start with this sentence structure, after somebody presents you an objection, well, your price is too high. We don't have the budget for that. I understand how you feel, or I understand that situation, and then go on with delivering the second part of it that we'll get to in a moment. Yep. So let's talk about this part of it, this feeling and listening part of it. What are your thoughts there?
Yeah, I agree. I think it validates what they're thinking, and you're trying to identify them on an emotional level, which I think is very effective. And
sometimes people want to be heard, right? They want you to acknowledge their objection, not be dismissive of it.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
I had a boss that going back to, you know, handling those objections in a presentation, because you know how it is. When we were selling, ERP software to large corporations, they all thought their problems were unique. And the truth is we had already heard that same problem 10 times that week. Right.
Right.
And you get callous, you get sloppy, and you cut people. I would cut people off because I knew what they were asking. Right. And not only is that rude, but doesn't build trust, I have to at least make that person feel like that is a unique concern, because it is, from their perspective, a unique concern.
Yeah.
So he taught me to wait till they're finished asking their question and then count to three in my head, which initially seemed like an eternity. But it really was a great skill to develop to allow people to get it out and for me to actively listen before I jump in with my answer.
Yeah. And that pause there's a lot of dynamics that take place in that pause, but you know, it does make the prospect think that you're thinking about, you know, the answer, which I think is great.
I think it's exactly great.
And we had colleagues that were really, really good at that.
Mm-hmm.
And it was fun to watch them work.
So I understand how you feel, David. Now, the second part of it is felt, which is to relate by sharing a past customer or client's experience. In other words, share how others felt the same way initially, had the same objection perhaps, or similar objection, and then you're going to present to them that understanding that, yep, I've had this issue before. I've had another customer. The way to phrase it is, many of our customers felt the way, or I've had another customer who felt the same way. So you acknowledge that that's a feeling or an objection or a concern or a question that others of my customers have had before.
Yes, yes, and I agree. And I think to go back to the first one, don't just say the phrase, "I understand how you feel." I've had salespeople on the phone say that a lot.
You feel it's very cliche, very canned.
Yeah, yeah. So don't just use that phrase. Think about that. That's the same here.
Exactly.
When you know, the felt is, you know, always give a relevant customer example of success. I think people like to hear those stories, and they do increase your credibility. They've proven that you've solved it. You try to make that relatable to your current prospect. And there's a lot of great benefits from this section.
Yeah. All right. So the words, again, because we're learning a skill here, you're going to take this, and as David was pointing out, and make it your own. What I want you to think about, though, and as you go to the show notes page and you follow this process, construct it using these three steps and then adjust it to what is your tone or what would be realistic. So instead of saying, going back to number one, instead of saying, "I understand how you feel, David," that I can appreciate that concern, or I, you know, what would you normally say? You know, I hear what you're saying. I can tell you that many of my other customers have had this same challenge or objection or concern, whatever word makes sense there. So that might be, for me, that would be more natural language. How would you say it?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think I would just come up with a sentence and use the word felt in there somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we had a customer who was building this wash and felt like they couldn't afford, you know, or whatever, I'd try to use that.
Yep.
That word.
To connect it back to acknowledging how they're feeling and what sources of their objection.
And I think it makes them feel better that that's a common feeling. I use that term a lot in consulting when people tell me something. I said, that's a common problem. And it does make them feel like if it's a common problem, then it's something we can help them solve.
Yeah. So key so far is you're listening actively to their objection. You're not interrupting them, even though maybe you've heard this objection 5 times already this day. You're listening actively. You're communicating one way or another that you understand, acknowledge, understand how they're feeling. And then the key component here as a way to overcome an objection is to share or relate it to another customer that you have. They may well remain nameless, and you're just referring to them in a vague sense, that had the same challenge or concern. So what that does, the power of that, that's why it was always so powerful to share case studies, to share examples of other how others have done it when we've done sales, and why, you know, testimonials are so effective, and why sharing success stories are so effective. Because initially people don't trust us, but they will be more likely to believe or hear or trust that someone else like them has done this.
Okay? Right. And when we were teaching sales training, we used to use the phrase, we had a customer had a similar situation.
Mm-hmm.
And that helped connect that prospect to other people that were dealing with the same issue.
And what it establishes is this concern that you have, this objection that you have, is normal and solvable. In other words, we've solved this before. We have helped Right. other customers with a similar or the same challenge solve that. That's what we're communicating there.
Yeah, when I was looking for consulting for the car wash business, when I was a car washer, this lady did Chris Plackey did an excellent job of selling to me by saying, you know what, I understand what you're going through. I've got your back. We can mm-hmm. solve this. And mm-hmm. and no one had ever communicated that in the way that she did that made me feel comfortable that this was a solvable problem. She'd seen it before, and she used the phrase, which, you know, I've got your back. I don't know if I would necessarily always use that phrase, but it did make me feel comfortable, you know, going ahead and working with her. But she did such a great job with that.
Yeah. And what is it that she offers for everybody who does?
She offers executive coaching. She kind of focuses now with women. She actually did, you know, mostly women, but she took us on. I guess she felt sorry for me and my organization. So she took us on, but she's a coach for executive women, you know, that are trying to, you know, grow or break the glass ceiling or whatever issues that they're struggling with in their business.
Understood.
Yeah.
Okay. The last part. So feeling, how do they feel about it? Acknowledging the objection. Felt, I have someone else who's felt the same way. And now I got to make the connection of found is the third F. So you're presenting, similar to what you just talked about, or the same thing in different words, the solution or the outcome, that transformation, right? You're going to explain how others, meaning my other clients, have found the solution or saw positive outcomes after deciding to invest in our solution. So it might be phrased something like they, you know, that customer example that I shared, you know, what we found is that David at his car wash, after using our product or service, they were able to, you know, solve the problem, right?
Right.
So we're tying it now to there's a solution, as you just explained. But the key here to this approach, and it's not, you're not always going to execute it exactly like this, as David's pointed out. The key is, though, that because often these objections can come up, and we don't have a high level of trust yet with that person, especially if this is not a complex sales cycle. In a complex sales cycle, we have days and days and months to develop relationships, right? But, right. You know, if I think again back to Josh, who has one opportunity when he knocks on a door at a construction site or some kind of manufacturing location that has a dumpster, you know, he's got 30 seconds to kind of engage, or he's out, right?
Yeah.
So in those situations, our trust level is low. Now, we talked about we can adjust that self-orientation to immediately increase our trust level. But nonetheless, it's by tying it to another example where someone else had the same or similar objection that helps us to overcome the objection.
Yes. And these are, if you talk about the solution selling model, these are the benefits. So these are the benefit statements that you create. But the benefit statements need to be in accordance to what their issues are. And,
we
hear a lot of people in life throwing out benefit statements that don't apply to people's and that's why, you know, basic selling of understanding their problem, talking about the solution, and coming up with the benefits. And if you're not trained, or if you're not using good sales methodology, you can throw out a bunch of benefits that make no difference to the customer.
Yep.
And so really tailoring the benefit statements, like, I don't have any time, right? So why would somebody want to buy our services? Well, they don't have time to create an operations manual or playbook. And that's the problem, us doing it and creating it, you know. And then you got to talk about, well, what's the benefit? Well, the benefit is it's going to save time. It's going to save your team time. It's going to save you time. You're going to get people on board that are semi-trained at that point. So you're going to really shortcut the training process. And so you always talk about, you know, the benefits in light of what the issue are, what the person's issue is.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So a lot more we can talk about that, but let's wrap it up with some additional tips that are related to this approach. So what I would recommend to you, if you're still listening, is that you go back, go to the show notes page, kind of break down these three steps, adjust it for your situation and your style and your tone, and then role play it. I think that's critical to any skill like this that you're developing from a sales perspective. If you don't have anybody to role play it with, record yourself. You know, get in front of a Zoom and just record yourself and then listen back to it. I know that's not as effective, but there's different ways to do it. But here, a couple of things we've talked about already, some of these. Discovery positioning. So discovery is a term that we use in sales to identify all of the opportunity that we may have to ask questions, to understand their business. Now, you might say, Henry, again, I don't have that opportunity. I'm knocking on doors. Well, that means that you need to have understood ahead of time that ideal client, because hopefully you're not knocking on just any door. You're knocking on a door where you've done some research that hopefully there's somebody there whose pains you understand, whose challenges you understand. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you're prepared in advance for the common objections that are going to come up. I think that is perhaps the most critical thing, David. We have to be responsible and accountable enough and give this enough thought to prepare in advance and continue to add to our list of common objections.
Right.
If we do that, that gives us an opportunity then to prepare and rehearse and have ready a response on how we're going to handle that objection. I remember very vividly in all of my sales opportunities, one of the first things I would do besides learning the product and the solution and the features is learning about how other customers were using the product or the service.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because exactly. Those stories, that's gold to be able to share how someone else, and hopefully, of course, since this is the first door you're knocking on, a little bit more challenging, you're going to have to come up with industry examples. But hopefully you've got one or two stories that you can share that apply. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. You always have to have that in your back pocket. And get ready to share those with your prospects. There is a big difference between selling a standard product. I'm going back to Josh and his pressing product. That's a standard type of product you're going to sell. But so talking about what it does, I think you're going to get to that point sooner than later. But as we sell services, our first call, we don't talk much. We talk a little bit about what we do, but we don't talk a lot about what we do.
Right. Right.
And so, you know, my colleague, Mike Griggs, is so much better at that than I am. And so I let him kind of lead the contest discussion because I want to get right into what we do And he is a lot more disciplined at asking the questions and the context questions. And to me, it almost feels a little uncomfortable because it's like, okay, we've been here for an hour and they still don't know what we do. Well, they have an idea what we do, but they don't understand how we do it or what it's going to cost. But we're able to always say, look, we're going to customize this solution to you. We want to get a better idea what you're looking for. And then we'll come back and do a proposal discussion with you on what we found and what we think we want to do. But it's so tough to do that, but it makes such a difference.
And that's an example. So depending on what you're selling, a product, like you said, or a service, there's levels of complexities and levels of complexities to how you deal with objections.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you got to apply this to your environment. But Mike, to start to share key takeaways, I think that in any environment, unless this is the first time you're doing it and then you need some time to build it up, you should begin to identify a common list of objections and prepare for handling those.
Right.
If you have a sales team, you should always be gathering from them. What were the objections? What did you hear? Because it's those people who are out there in the field who have the most relevant and up-to-date intelligence. Then that's what's most valuable. How are they responding to it, and what worked and what didn't? So this is continuously learned. This cannot be a document that gathers dust, right? If there's anything that's really a living document, this should be. So you've got to prepare, role play if possible, as awkward as role playing can be, but you got to role play to learn a technique like this or whatever semblance of a technique that you have. You need a technique, a skill. This is a skill on how to effectively handle objections. Get good at it. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. And look at it as part of the sales process. This is good. It's not bad.
Well said. Yeah.
So you got to get out of that mindset that objections are bad. They're good.
I found, as always, HubSpot, which is a CRM system, and I don't get any payment for this, but I love their content, and they have an article titled Objection Handling, 44 Common Sales Objections and How to Respond. And I'll have a link to that article on the show notes page for this episode at thehowofbusiness.com. I've got a whole series of other sales-related episodes, and you can just go, when you go to thehowofbusiness.com, at the top, you click on podcast and then archive, and then go into the sales archive of episodes. So you can find a lot more information there on other episodes, other people that I've interviewed as well related to sales. So those are our key takeaways. As David said very clearly and succinctly, objections are simply part of the process. In fact, if you're not getting objections, that's probably a bad sign. And it's part of life, right? When we present an opinion or a position or something we want to do, you're going to get objections, especially if you've got even a team that's asking questions, not just saying yes every time you present something. But in sales, it's part of the process. Embrace it, learn how to do it well. You can get better at handling and responding to objections. It's not something you're either born with or not, right? It's not, oh, that person's a natural salesperson, so they can handle objections. No, I don't believe that at all. You and I have helped people, including ourselves, to become better at objection handling, right?
Yes, yes. And it's a skill anybody can learn. It's just a skill.
That's right. Okay. Any final words before I wrap it up here?
No, good subject. I'm glad you decided to talk about this. I think it's something people can really use some assistance on. So good. Yep.
All righty. Well, I wish all of you the best as you start and grow your successful and profitable small business. This is Henry Lopez. My co-host today is David Begin. Thanks for joining us for this episode of The How of Business. I release new episodes every Monday morning, and you can find the show anywhere you listen to podcasts, including the How of Business YouTube channel and my website, thehowofbusiness.com. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening to The How of Business. For more information about our coaching programs, online courses, show notes pages, links, and other resources, please visit thehowofbusiness.com.